Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction novel that I read as I read it. And then I stick the podcast up here, I stick the review up in the podcast feed. Except actually for the last time I did some recording, I actually saved up the episodes that I was recording and did three at once because I was busy and doing other stuff as well. So I recorded three in one day and then I put them all online in the feed on one day, which means when I go over to the statistics, the download statistics, we have Ian M. Banks Transition number 85, which was the last one in the feed. There's like 1,076 downloads for that. Because, of course, when it comes through, iTunes always downloads the last episode automatically, which means that there's lots of people listen to that, but probably missed the first two or the previous two that I put up. So episode 84 has 469 downloads, and China Mieville's The City and the City, episode 83, has 538. So in other words, go back if you've missed them. Go back and listen to those previous ones that you've missed or that you didn't download. Or maybe this could be the fact that maybe around about 500 people don't actually listen and their iTunes just downloads the podcast automatically and they don't listen. So maybe I've only got 500 listeners rather than about 1,000 listeners. I'm not sure. Either way, go back because you've probably missed them. Next up on my notes, I have... no, that's it. So I'll just get straight into today's podcast, today's episode. A little bit of a setup. The last time I uploaded these episodes, I was actually in New Zealand, in Auckland in New Zealand, and I uploaded the episodes there. And then I flew back from New Zealand. It was around about, it was a long time, put it this way. Talking about Berlin time where I live, I woke up in Auckland at around about 6:30 on the evening of Wednesday evening, talking Berlin time here. And then I actually went to bed at around about 4 o'clock on Saturday morning Berlin time. So I was up for a long, long time, didn't go to bed for a long, long time, slept for a bit on the planes, you know, an hour here, an hour there, an hour here, there. So I had a lot of sleep missing, a lot of, sleep deprivation, but also 12 hours, exactly 12 hours of jet lag. And so on the plane back, I was reading this novel, which I picked up in a bookshop in Auckland. It's Gene Wolfe's The Shadow of the Torturer. So I read quite a bit of it then, but then when I got back home to Berlin, it took me a lot longer to read the second half of the book than it did for me to read the first half of the book. Anyway, this novel is pretty much the single most recommended novel. There's been quite a few novels that, you know, gets loads and loads of recommendations that I finally get around to reading. And Gene Wolfe's The Shadow of the Torturer, it's the first novel in the it's like volume one of the Book of the New Sun. And it's often, you know, held up as one of the greatest science fiction novels or series ever, or greatest fantasy series ever, because it sort of falls in that gap or sort of bridges the gap between science fiction and fantasy. Or at least that's the idea. So loads of people recommend it to me, but I've never, you know, picked it up. I thought I'll finally get round to reading it. So here it is. So it's set in, I think it's meant to be, you know, it's meant to be maybe mysterious, but I sort of picked up on this quite quickly, that it's actually set not on Earth. The planet that they call it is Earth, spelled U-R-T-H, Earth. But then you quite quickly find out this is sort of like a far future of Earth as we know it. So it's set, you know, obviously thousands or maybe a million, I don't know how many thousands of years in the future it's meant to be set, but the sun is dying. Now, I'm not quite sure about the science behind a dying sun, but I'll just go with it. So the sun is dying for some reason. Maybe it's getting dimmer or something. I'm not sure. There's lots of things that we pick up on because the narrator sees things, but he doesn't understand that he's actually living in a spaceship. So there's this, just to zoom out a bit more, there's this city somewhere in the southern hemisphere on a river. I'm thinking like a city in... I don't know, somewhere in the southern hemisphere, probably in South America. I'm not entirely sure where it's set, but it's sort of quite a temperate setup. So it reminds me maybe of Uruguay or Argentina or somewhere down there. You know, I'm guessing it's set in America, in South America, not North America, or maybe that he's mixed up North and South, and it's actually set in North America. I'm not entirely sure, but there's this city which is surrounded by this huge wall, and I'm thinking this huge wall is as old as the spaceport that he lives in the middle of the city. And I'm thinking maybe the walls were built as some kind of way to keep out the hordes of people who are flocking to the spaceship, to the spaceport to get off of the Earth and to go out into space. Because there's lots of references to people going up into space and coming down again, and all the population leaving the Earth. And I'm thinking the walls were built to keep people out. Maybe. I'm not entirely sure. But then in the center of this city, which has grown up in these walls, is this parking lot for spaceships. And there's, you know, it talks about different spaceships. He lives in metal towers that go up into the Earth and they're not really fixed to the ground. And there's maybe some like missile silos that go underneath the ground as well. And also it talks about like a service gantry to one of the towers. I think it's the witches live in a tower. Anyway, all of this sort of takes place in the background. It's sort of described in the background because it's set so far in the future. Society has degraded and degraded and degraded and down into sort of like a more feudal, medieval kind of baroque kind of way, like setting there, which is quite interesting. And so for example, like you say, that he lives in a spaceship. The Citadel is obviously a collection of spaceships or rockets or something like that point up into the sky. But it's been so long ago that they've sort of forgotten what has gone on there. But then he goes through this goes to a library and discovers there's lots of books in the library, but there's obviously like some kind of SD card, memory card with the entire library contents on like a floppy disk or something like that. So obviously this novel being written in 1980, I guess floppy disks were just about coming in. I'm not entirely sure when floppy disks started coming in, but there's obviously some kind of references to computer technology there. But most computers have obviously fallen out of use by then, and sort of the memory card idea or all of the library being kept on some kind of crystal is quite an interesting idea. And there's lots of, he goes past these pictures. Now the pictures are described quite well, but obviously one of the pictures that he sees, it says there's this person in some armor holding a stiff flag and looking out, and like in the reflection on his gold, you know, reflective helmet, looking out across a desert. And I'm thinking, well, that's obviously a picture of a NASA astronaut on the moon holding a strangely stiff flag. Well, that's of course the American flag because there's no wind, so it's like strangely stiff. So yeah, it's this whole kind of setup, and it's really quite good. You know, he goes into these gardens, and these gardens, they call them gardens, but it's obviously some kind of biosphere for alien plant life or old Earth plant life or genetically modified plant life. There's lots of references to things which are obviously old Earth technology or current technology or 21st or 22nd century technology, but in a few thousand years into the future, all of this has been forgotten. So it becomes this dying Earth fantasy series. So I might as well, yeah, as normally later on in the review I talk about science and technology, but that's what we've got. It comes down into this very, very low level. People have swords, people live in buildings which are sort of crumbling and falling down. You know, there's, you know, people go to markets and they put on plays as entertainment rather than listening to the radio. So yeah, very low level of technology, but in the background a lot of technology, which means that because it's meant to be a fantasy, I think you're meant to think it's a fantasy kind of setup, that a lot of the things that you see and a lot of things that are talking about, like this mysterious palace to the north which is roaming, it's sort of like, okay, this is probably doesn't exist, or it's some kind of hologram, or maybe it's actually a roving kind of, you know, palace, which is like a, you know, they think a citadel. They don't realize that it's actually a spaceship. So maybe this other citadel that they talk about in the beginning of the novel, somewhere to the north, is obviously another kind of... I say it's obviously. The way that I pick up on my reading of all of this is that it's some kind of spaceship which can rove around. So some people can find it and some people can't find it. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not there. So it's a bit strange, and I'm thinking that maybe later on in this series we'll get to meet some of these places or see some of these places as well. Normally I talk a bit more about the plot here, but I'm going to go straight into the character, because this, and also talks a bit more about the themes and the writing style as well, because it's quite a jumbled up book where you can't really separate the setting from the story, from the character, from the writing style, because there's only really one character of any importance, and his name is Severian. I'm not really quite sure how you pronounce it. And Severian is He is an apprentice torturer, and we meet him at the beginning of the book, and he's down there with his mates who are sort of hanging out there at the beginning, you know, and he's fallen in a river or something like that, and he's trying to break in back into the citadel, trying to get back to his tower where he lives as an apprentice torturer. And he's a torturer, so lots of, you know, other of these sort of guilds that are set up in the citadel and other people bring the torturers people to torture. I'll talk maybe a bit about more about that in a minute. But what happens is that this Severian is he says that he's a reliable narrator. He has a perfect memory. And this novel is written as some kind of memoir or, you know, reflection back. It's obviously written, by him in the first person, talking about his experience of growing up and his experience in this city that he comes from. And it's a bit strange because he says he's got a perfect memory, but he really doesn't have a perfect memory. Or if he does have a perfect memory, he's an unreliable narrator. And so he often says, oh, and I did this. And I'm thinking, well, that's not really his motivations here, is it? And I'm not really quite sure what's going on there. But he says that's what happened. And I'm like, yeah, right, if you say so. And other things he skips over, he talks about, you know, there's a lot of language and a lot of references made to things that we presumed to know. And actually, at the appendix at the very end of the book, Gene Wolfe actually says, oh, yes, and when I say this, I don't mean this. Or when I say a horse, it's not really a horse, but it's what we would now think of as a horse, but, you know, and that kind of thing. I'm like, okay, fair enough, so it's a big horse. And that's what you kind of get there with his writing. And also women, there's like a few women in the book, there's maybe four or five women, and all of them find him amazingly attractive. And again, I'm not quite sure if this is actually because he's a just telling lies, or if he's like unreliable, or if he just remembers it wrong, that, you know, all the women are just falling in love with him straight away and he's falling in love with them straight away. But also there is this hint that he isn't just a normal human, he's some kind of highborn human, you know, a bit sort of mysterious, and he's got perfect skin, so maybe he's really engaging and maybe he's really handsome and he's, you know, the perfect build and really engaging and stuff like that. But I'm thinking that, I'm not really quite sure. I personally think Severian is full of crap and isn't that reliable, which is quite interesting because, like I say, the way he writes about the world, he doesn't know that he lives in a spaceship. He just thinks he lives in a metal tower, and he doesn't realize that the gates of the city are so big because you had to drive through buses and trucks, or maybe even bring spaceships in through the front gate. I'm not quite sure what's going on, but, you know, I'm always thinking that this is a spaceport. The whole city is grown up within a spaceport, so everything is larger than life. If you think about the shuttle, the huge truck that they put a shuttle on and move a shuttle out. This book was written in the 1980, I guess. So, you know, the shuttle technology and the huge building that the shuttle is put together in, you know, it's that kind of scale, but then brought it down to the size of humans thousands of years in the future who don't quite know what's going on. But again, he doesn't understand what's going on there, but he gives enough hint for us readers to understand what's going on there. So that's quite interesting. And it's really strange that the last novel that I read, which was Ian Banks' Transition, one of the viewpoint characters in that, one of the many first-person viewpoint characters, is a torturer. So I've gone from reading a novel where one of the main characters or one of the characters is a torturer into this novel where one of them is a torturer. And you do pick up on common themes. For example, it's made quite clear in Transition that one of the roles of a torturer, or the main role of a torturer, isn't to get information out of somebody. It's actually to punish them or to keep them, to hold them for political reasons until that somebody else does what they want. And it's the same thing here. It's like they state straight away, it's like, oh yeah, we're here to get information out of this person, but we're not really getting information out of the person. It's really because of this whole political situation which is happening up in this other citadel to the north, which we sort of only read about in the first part of this novel. I'm thinking, okay, that's good too as well. Also because he's a torturer and because he's a bit removed and he's lived his entire life in this citadel, like removed from the rest of the city. He's only ever been into the city a few times or not very far into the city. He's never seen the city wall except from a distance. He's never seen the gates. He's never been here, never been there. We get this interesting setup where he's a bit naive. Well, he's very naive, but yet he's talking about his naivety from a distance in the future, which again is very strange. But and And so you're not quite sure if what he's reading or if you're saying what he actually thought at the time or was what you're thinking in the past. So it's a very strange setup here. He is a bit of a psycho, but then he's very naive at the same time. It's very strange. But yet... We do. Oh no, I'll talk a bit about the plot now. Yeah. So the plot, it actually starts quite good. Like I say, he goes up and it talks quite a long time about his life as a apprentice torturer. And I actually found this quite interesting, quite intriguing and things like that. But you realize that this is very much the start of the book, that he is going to go on some kind of hero's quest. And all of the stuff that happens before he starts in his quest, I actually really enjoyed. You know, there's this thing that he gets into a bit of a scuffle with this person called Vodalus right at the beginning of the novel. You know, it's not really spoiling it here. And that he gets given this little token which says he's now Vodalus's man. I'm thinking, wow, this is really interesting. And there's lots of things going on there. He's doing his job, and then there's this woman who's brought in and things like that. And one thing leads to another, but he is finally sent out. I don't want to spoil it too much, but he's sent out from the Citadel of the Torturers. And actually, the Torturers Guild isn't called the Torturers Guild. It's called the Guild of Truth and Retribution or something like that. I'm not quite sure what it is. Or Perception and Truth. But, you know, so it's a little bit 1984-ish there. But there is some other guilds as well. Like, there's the Witches Guild and the Librarians Guild and this guild and that guild there. And they all live in their different towers. Thing is, it was such a long time ago that I read that first part of the book that I can't remember it in a lot of detail. So the plot really picks up. He gets sent out and he has to journey up to this city to fulfill a job in this other city. I think it's to the south as well, or you know, sort of like to the southwest of the main city, which I can't actually remember the name of the city where the book takes place. But yeah, he has to go out to Thrax, and he sets out, and suddenly the book gets bogged down in all kinds of weird, inconsequential, well, not really inconsequential, but random encounters, which ties him up in the city. All he's got to do is get from the Citadel to the city gates, and he starts off halfway through the book, and then by the end of the book, he only just reaches the city gates. And in that time, this is what really made it really difficult for me, because I really struggled to get through this part of the book. He heads for the gates, and then he has to go to this inn, and he stays the night because it's a long way across this huge city. You know, the city is meant to be huge and sprawling. There's a million people live there, and they're all moving around all the time inside. And it just takes ages for it to get there, and ages. And then he goes off in this other thing, and he meets this person, and this person tries to steal his sword because he's got this really expensive, impressive sword which he's meant to use to obviously to protect himself, but also to carry out executions, because that's what torturers do. They also carry out executions. And it's like, oh, okay, what's he? And he goes off this person, and he meets this person, then he goes into this, you know, biodome, and then he goes here, and then this person suddenly turns up, and then he re-meets this person. And it's just all the time. Every time I sort of picked up the novel to read it, when I sort of got into bed at night, I picked up the novel, and it put me to sleep instantly. And the next night, or in the morning, I'd try and read a bit more, but I was just like, oh, okay, I just got to get up and get on with my life. And then I'd try and read something else, and then it just really took me a long time to get through. And I tried really, really hard all the time to get through to the end of this novel, to the point where last night, I'm around about maybe 30 or 40 pages from the end of the novel. Really not too far at all. And some things have happened, and some things which I think are important has happened, but then he sort of skips over a bit, and then he gets to this bit, and I'm thinking, okay, just going to push through to the end. So I put on some music, just for my own nostalgia's sake, downloaded or bought from iTunes, Moon Safari by Air. And I thought, well, this is quite nice, relaxing music. I'll just put this on and read the novel. And so I sat down on the couch. I made sure I wasn't in bed so I wouldn't fall asleep, but I sat down on the couch, got around about a page and a half into it, and fell asleep. And I woke up around about, well, I could tell you exactly how much later I woke up, because it played through another two my iTunes had played through another two albums by by Morcheeba, I think it is, and then all the way through most of the way through a podcast for a BBC podcast. And I woke up when they started talking about sleep talking in this podcast, and I was like, oh, this is a bit weird. And I woke up and I was like, oh, okay, they're talking about sleep talking. So I listened to most of the end of this podcast, and then I got up and I pressed play and I took it back and started listening to the album again, sat down on the couch again, and fell asleep almost immediately straight away again, and woke up 2.5 albums later when they started talking about sleep talking in this BBC podcast again. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. And then I was like, okay, forget it. I can't get through. And this was only around about 11 o'clock last night as well. You know, I normally go to sleep a lot later than that. But, you know, I'd sat down to start reading at maybe 10. I don't know, you know. No, it was maybe a bit later. Yeah, so I maybe went to bed at about midnight. And then I tried reading it again upstairs, of course, fell asleep straight away. And then this morning, I managed to stay in bed. And it's just a real hard slog to get through the book. It's not like nothing is happening. Things are happening. But things that are inconsequential are happening. But then they're not really inconsequential because I can see them as, you know, foreshadowing and putting into place things which will happen later on in the book. So just from the novel that I've read now, I predict that by the end of book four in the Book of the New Sun, because the sun is dying, the claw, which is the second novel is, one of the other novels in this series is named after the claw. And of course, that's going to be the magical device, the magical alien device, which is going to be able to, in the end, restart the sun. So at the end of book four, this is my prediction, Severian will fulfill his destiny by flying into space, restarting the sun, coming back to Earth as the savior of the world and being the king of the world or of South Africa or South America or wherever this novel, or maybe Australia, wherever this novel is set down there in the Southern Hemisphere. But the thing is, I know that on the way, there's going to be maybe 2.5 more books before we get to the second half of the last book in the series, where there's going to be this meandering plot, and I say plot in inverted commas here, because I reckon it's just going to be Severian sleeping with all the women that he meets, or them wanting to sleep with him. He's going to kill people inconsequentially along the way, bad guys, good guys, it doesn't really matter. He's going to meet strange people and team up with them, and then they're going to disappear after a while. And he's going to go on strange side quests all the way through, and all the way along the way, he's going to be noticing like old Earth technology or alien artifacts or alien technology, and he's going to describe them in ways that are like a really detailed descriptions, but obviously he's not going to get it, but we as the readers, we're going to get it as well. And but he's not going to notice what he sees as well, and the descriptions are going to be amazing. The descriptions are going to be like florid and great writing along the way, but I reckon not a lot is going to happen in the 2.5 books before what I saw being set up at the beginning of this book is going to happen. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm not getting it, or maybe there's more going on here than I want it to go on, but I'm not quite sure I'm going to read the next two novels in this book. Maybe I'll skip forward and just read the last novel. But it goes, this is the end of the book. It goes, what happens is at the end of the thing, there's this thing that happens and it just skips over and it leaves us on a huge cliffhanger, which is really weird because like there was a natural ending point to the novel, like about 30 pages beforehand, but he doesn't end the novel there. He goes on this other little side adventure, which I'm thinking, yeah, he randomly meets up with some random people he randomly met before, and then random chance puts him back together with these random people for him to randomly do something and then randomly lose them again. And then it says, here I pause, having carried you, reader, from gate to gate. And then it goes on, like, the last line is, yes, here I pause, he says it again. Here I pause, if you wish to walk further. Oh, he says, if you wish to walk no further with me, reader, I cannot blame you. It is no easy road. And I'm like, no shit, this is no easy road. Especially as, I'm not saying that I'm some kind of genius and can see what's coming, but the promise of what is coming up in this novel later on isn't, I'm not quite sure if it's going to make the road that it leads to any easier, so maybe I'm not going to walk further with Severian and Jean Wolfe here. Except, of course, and this is what I'm going to put it over to you, my listeners, it's up to you now to convince me to keep reading through this novel. Say, or this series of novels, say, don't spoil the second or third or fourth novel for me, but say what I've already set up, which is thinking here, isn't going to happen, and it's actually the plot is going to move on a bit further. It's not just going to be random encounters all the way through, and stuff's actually going to happen. He's not going to just sleep with all the women that he meets. And it's just really strange that I can sort of see where the book is going, but maybe I can't. So it's up to you. And if I get enough good feedback, or if I get some good feedback, some good emails about this, I'll do like a feedback show about The Shadow of the Torturer and immediately move straight on to the next book. And then just I'll read the next three books in this series as in a single sitting, and then like sum up my view of the entire novel or the entire Book of the New Sun at the end of book four, you know, without reviewing them one by one as I go through. But you've got to tell me that I haven't just predicted what's going to happen and that I'm actually going to get something different out of this than what I actually have got out of it so far, with like the dying sun and all these other kind of things. Anyway, so moving on to next. I've done science writing style. Okay, so like I say, it's very dense. There's lots of actually quite interesting descriptions, but like I say, the interesting descriptions are only there because they're descriptions of a world that he is sort of familiar with, but then he's not familiar with, because he, Severian, is always in these new situations. So he's like, so much of the book talks about like this single day or these like 3 days that he's in the city. Like the first half of the book covers like years, and then the second half of the book covers 3 days. So the pacing is really weird, and but the descriptions are quite interesting because it's new to him, but then it's so old, but then it's recognizable for me as the reader of it being set in a different world, you know. So it's that's all quite interesting. A lot of the words that are used, though, it's very strange, but then it's actually mentioned in the appendix. It goes, you know, it's originally composed in a tongue that has not yet achieved existence. I'm like, okay, so it's set way in the future. And it's been rendered into English. So he says, I might have easily saved myself a great deal of labor by having recourse to invented terms. In no case have I done so. Yeah, he says, so such word as peltast and androgyn and exultant are substitutes of a kind and are intended to be suggestive rather than definitive. Metal is usually, but not always, employed to designate a substance of the sort the word suggests to contemporary minds. Wow, even this appendix is written in all this convoluted language and long words and interesting words and words which I don't recognize, but I'm just thinking, well, I'll just go with it, you know. But yeah, so there's lots of strange language in this, but I think it's actually very well written. You know, it's very interestingly written, and I can see why people or like everyone holds this up to be like a great work of literature as well as genre fiction, because of like the descriptions and the way it's written and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't mean that the pacing is good. And then there's lots of action in the novel, and some of it's described in real close detail, but then it's sort of like something that's inconsequential. And then there's like these major events which are just like, oh, and then I did this, and I'm like, wow, wait a second, that's your job, you should be telling me more about that, why didn't you go that? But then that's skipped over, and I'm thinking that maybe the inconsequential things are going to come back later. Are they? Oh, do you think he's going to meet this person again? Maybe, you know, it's that kind of strange thing. Oh, then he does. Oh, that's great. So it's a bit strangely set up that the inconsequential random events are described in detail, and of course this is one of the themes of the novel, I'm quite sure. But then there's other like dialogue, like conversations and dialogue which is talked about like in huge detail, but then it's really strange because this is meant to be Severian's perfect memory that he's talking about, but then people can't talk that way, people don't talk that way. And if it's actually meant to be a completely faithful rendering of other people's conversations, that just doesn't make sense, because they can't talk that way, because they don't talk that way. And it is very strange. Or maybe in the far future people do talk that way, but then he'll say this person said this. Like he's like attributing, you know, dialogue with attribution, and then he'll say, and then I told them a story about this, and he sort of just says that he told them something rather than saying what he told them, and then the next person will say something, but then sometimes he tells us that a conversation happened and what it was about, and other times he gives us the whole conversation. So the whole like being 100% reliable, 100% like a perfect memory narrator, so that's a bit strange as well, but you know, it's there as well. But the dialogue, for the most part, isn't that interesting. And if it's a female, all the females have one voice, and all the other males have one voice, and then Severian has his own voice, but you know, it's a bit strange. But then, I don't know. So, the themes of the novel, just to finish up this review here, I didn't really get a lot of the themes out of the novel, except for, you know, isolation, you know, the isolation of a torturer who does a bad job, and how the people who do it, it's just their job, and he doesn't feel any remorse for the torturing, and that's, so that's a bit of a strange thing there. But again, I didn't really get a whole lot out of that, I'm not sure. Maybe there's another sort of theme that goes along, that women are only used for sex and all women are young and beautiful, or except maybe those are the only one that Severian notices. Maybe he notices them all about, but he only tells about the young ones who want to have sex with him, or he falls in love with within a few minutes, or they fall in love with him within a few minutes. So maybe that's a bit strange. And again, I think one of the main things is that Severian has like this destiny. He has fate and he gets dreams. Oh, this is something I always hate about novels. I think I've mentioned this a few times before. If the only way you as an author can talk about the destiny or something that someone is frightened about or something, you know, that has, you know, he has to think about, just sticking it in a dream is lazy and not very clever. Just to have a dream sequence where they dream and they just get laid out some exposition or some future thing like that, it's just too easy, and unless it ties back into the plot, not that clever at all. So that's what I didn't like. But anyway, for someone who has this destiny to obviously, you know, it's a bit strange that in this dream he has a dream, and it's a bit like Joseph in the Joseph in his Technicolor Dreamcoat Joseph in the New Testament in the end of Genesis, that he has this dream and that one day in the future he's going to become the king or something, and he goes, oh, am I going to become the king? You're going to be a leader, or you're going to be a king. Yeah, you're going to be king. What do you want to become? Maybe a king. So that's all a bit strange going on there as well. But for someone who has this destiny, who is obviously high born and been abandoned as a child, or maybe I didn't talk about that at the beginning. Anyway, he's been abandoned as a child in the torture. So it's like a bit of a mixture of Moses is being abandoned as a child and obviously going to be grown up to become a leader of men, and Joseph with his dreams about future glory there as well. So you've got a bit of that going on, which is interesting, but then when it's so transparent in that way, which, well, maybe it's not transparent to everyone, but to me, for someone who, like, one of the books that I read like 3 or 4 times last year was Genesis and Exodus, actually. I read the first half of Exodus as well. You know, that kind of stuff just jumps out at you. So I'm getting that there's like Old Testament kind of vibes coming in here. And actually, if I think about it, I could probably come up with a lot more parallels between the shadow of the torturer and like Genesis stories and the patriarchs and things like that. But again, maybe that's just me reading too much into it, because like I wrote an academic paper about the patriarchs of Genesis in December. So it's a bit strange, that kind of stuff, but it's all there. I'm not saying that it's not cleverly done. As my conclusion here, I get the idea, I get the game that Gene Wolfe is playing. You know, I can see a lot of different levels, and it's really clever what he's doing, and I get it. And I'm not saying that I didn't like the, you know, I'm not saying that it's not good, and I'm not saying it's not clever, and I'm not saying the writing isn't good. However, no event in the novel has any notable significance outside, I mean, there are 2 significant events which he actually decides to do something, or, you know, where he does something and something happens. One of them is in the first 20 pages of the book, and one of them is at the halfway point of the book. But then all of the rest of the incidents that happen in the book are random meetings, and I can see that they're significant. Like I say, there's the bit with the there's this religious cult, you know, a cult about the dying sun, and they have this religious artifact which goes missing. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I can see the significance of that. And I can see that the girl might be significant later on, and this meeting with Vodalus is going to be significant, and all these different things are going to be significant. Yet, they're not tied together, and the plot doesn't bring them back together again. So they're only significant for the paragraph that they're described, and then you get like 50 pages or 20 or 30 pages between that and the next thing that happens. But it's going to happen randomly, so the events aren't tied together, which means that the plot is really unsatisfying, which means that I couldn't get into it, and it's really bad. There's a puzzle here, but I think I've solved the puzzle already. Maybe I have, maybe I haven't. I know it's up to you guys to email me and tell me if I have or haven't solved the book and if it's worth me actually going on. So there's a puzzle. There's lots of layers, there's lots of themes, yeah, and I'm getting all of that. But the plot couldn't pull me through. And every time you think, okay, this hero's going to go on a journey, but then he doesn't. And I'm like, just fucking get on with it, get a move on. And then he gets delayed here, and I'm like, okay, so there's going to be someone else he wants to have sex with. Right, okay, great. And there's going to be, and this person's going to find him. Okay, just get on. And so all of the time where I'm thinking there's going to be something happening, and then doesn't happen. So you can have all these other stuff going on. You can have layers and layers of meaning, and layers of interesting writing, and layers of history, and layers of theme. But if there isn't anything behind it, if there's not a character which I can go, right, I actually like here, and there's anything going on, I can't get into it. And that's why the book just sent me to sleep. And by the end of the novel, even though, like I say, at the beginning of the novel, I was getting into it. Halfway through the novel, I was thinking, well, yeah, right, great, let's just get on with it and let's go start this quest. And then for the second half of the book, no quest, just random encounters, which means that I couldn't, the plot isn't there. So all of the good stuff about this novel and all the things I can see that Gene Wolfe is doing, transparently or not transparently, interestingly or not interestingly, cleverly or not cleverly, can't make up for the fact that the plot bored me, or the lack of plot bored me. And I just couldn't find anything interesting about the characters or what was going on, because I've already telegraphed a story all the way through to the end. And if it's just going to leave me and say, oh, it's a hard road and what's going to happen by the end of it and you're going to have to stick with it, I'm thinking maybe not. Maybe I'm just not going to go to it. So, I'm only going to give this novel 1.5 stars. You know, the beginning of it, maybe 3.5 stars. It was good. It was clever. But then just the complete lack of plot and the lack of delivery on any of the ideas there. Like, the unreliable narrator was clever, but the unreliable narrator didn't comment on the plot or doesn't seem to have anything going on with the plot, and nothing comes back to the plot, or nothing, well, it's not even the plot, it's like the story, the through thread. It has to be a line from the beginning of a novel to the end of a novel, and there is, from like 30 pages in to 100 and, well, how long is this novel, it's what, 300 pages long, so from around about 40 let me see, from 29 pages in through to around about, oh, I can't even see where it goes to. To the part that he leaves his, to the leave, so around, up to around about, what, 177. So there's a through line there. Before that, there's not a through line. And from page 177 or 160 or whatever it's going to be through to page 300, there's not a thread. Or there is a thread, but the thread is random chance. And that's the most unsatisfying thing you can read in a novel. So, like I say, email me if I'm doing it wrong. Really, really disappointed in this novel. I think it's mainly because of the disappointment. That's what it comes down to, I think, because so many people have said this is one of the greatest novels. I've had more recommendations for this novel or this series than any other as well. So I think mainly my unenjoyment of the book was because I was expecting so much more. And I got a lot of what I imagine people like about the book, but it just doesn't impress me or it doesn't interest me. There's lots here, but it doesn't come together into a novel. Like I say, it reminds me a lot of Anathem, which I really enjoyed, because that starts off in like this monastery citadel kind of thing and then goes out into a wider story. But even the stuff that took place in the beginning of the novel, when people say, oh, not a lot happens, nothing happens for the first 200 pages or nothing happens for the first 300 pages, I'm thinking they didn't read the same novel as me, because there's so much happened. There's like an entire mystery novel in the first 200 pages of Anathem, which I really enjoyed. Whereas in this novel, I'm not saying nothing happens, but it's like nothing happens here which has any impact later on in this novel, in this first book. So if it was the entire novel, if I sat down and read the entire Book of the New Sun in one sitting, I'd understand that this was just the really, really boring bit and tedious bit that you have to push through. But I'm thinking that the next three books, or 2.5 books, are going to be the same. Anyway, I think I'm repeating myself now a bit more. So the conclusion to my conclusion is I have been falling asleep really early. This book has been amazing for me to get over my jet lag and lack of sleep from a week and a half ago. Of course, it's taken me a long time to read it, but every time I've sat down in bed, I'm thinking, okay, I read this novel, fallen asleep immediately. It's been absolutely amazing, to the point where I'm waking up at around about 7 o'clock, 6:30, 7 o'clock, every morning now. It's great because I'm getting loads done during the day, and like even now it's still in the morning, I'm getting stuff done every morning that I'd normally not get done, you know, because, you know, I'm self-employed and I'm at home at the moment. I'm not working. I'm working on projects at home, but there's no sort of, it's not like time. I'm not working for any boss or anything. I don't have to actually get up in the morning. So normally I get up around, you know, by the time I've got breakfast and finished everything, you know, it's like 11 o'clock or something. And then I actually start my day. And now I'm really starting my day around about 8 o'clock in the morning, getting loads done. It's great. And it's great that this book has managed to sort of turn my life around from this nasty jet lag situation, this 12 hours out kind of situation, but I don't really want that from a novel. Anyway, Next novel that I'm reading is pretty much the opposite of this book in every way. It's called Damon by Daniel Suarez. And I got a few recommendations by email of this novel as well from listeners. And I heard about it on some other podcasts as well. I think the Sword and Laser podcast, they did it as one of their books. And it was mentioned on the Twit Network as well. I think they mentioned it too. So, anyway, I thought I'd give it a go. I got it on audiobook. I'm already probably around about a third of the way through it, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. So that review will be coming shortly. Otherwise, I may or may not check out book two of the Book of the New Sun, volume two of the Book of the New Sun. It's up to you to convince me. So that's it. Thanks for listening. Email me, luke@juggler.net, if you have anything to tell me, and I'm sure you might have something to tell me, because I know there's a lot of fans of this novel which may want to defend it or something like that. Like I say, if I get a good lot of email, I'll do a feedback episode and continue reading. And you can also follow me on Twitter, at Luke Burge at Twitter, or you can read my blog, which is lukeburge.com/blog. I've not actually done that many updates recently on my blog because I've been working on other projects here at home, but I will get back onto that. And finally, follow me or become my friend or follow my reviews on goodreads.com/Luke Burridge. That's the best way to keep up with what I'm doing literature-wise, reading-wise. And also, if you become my friend, I do keep up with what other people are reading, and I really enjoy seeing what you're reading or what you're enjoying or what you're not enjoying and things like that. So, that's about it. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.